Disclaimer, I am a counseling student, I am not a mental health professional, and I cannot give or offer mental health services.
You are listening to Good, You. I'm your host, Samantha, and today I sit down with Amber Castro as we discuss intergenerational trauma. So intergenerational trauma is trauma passed down from generation to generation. And, you know, Amber dives into how this can affect the family dynamic and how boundary setting can come into play. So it's a really great episode, really informative, and I hope you are all excited. Let's get started. So hello, Amber. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you for having me in this space. I'm really excited to be here and share a little bit more of my knowledge.
Yeah. And I think you just finished school, right? Recently.
So I just graduated this past weekend. Yes. But unfortunately, I have one more semester to go. So I will be done at the end of July.
Well, that's still fine. That's still awesome. Is it because you have to be in the May graduation if you're finishing in summer? That's how it goes.
So okay. My school does this whole thing where like they take in students every semester. So it's like, it's not just one admission. It's admission throughout the whole entire year. So yeah. I started at January 2020, right before the pandemic started. And then like everything got flipped upside down. It was an interesting experience to say the least.
I just actually interviewed my graduate assistant coworker who just graduated, and she went through all the 2020 experience. I was like, I had just passed that up. Thank goodness. Yeah. So feel for y'all, truly.
Oh my gosh. What an experience, I have to say, but we did it.
You did it. You did it. One semester. It's nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell us about yourself and what you do.
Yes. So my name is Amber Castro. I currently live in Southern California in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles area. Currently, I am in my internship year at my practicum site where I am working in particular with the Latinx community. The internship that I'm actually doing is a nonprofit for LA County Department of Mental Health. So unfortunately, it doesn't really always pay the best, but we're not here for the money. We're here to really just help out the community and give back. So that's been great. I actually was with this company before for the last 2 years as a mental health worker. I decided I want to stay with them and do my internship year. And I actually got offered a position. So I'm starting.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Congratulations. That's awesome. Thank you. That's what those positions are for.
Yes, exactly. Currently, I'm just finishing up my master's program. Like I mentioned, I graduated this past weekend, and my master's is in marriage and family therapy and also in a professional clinical counseling. And my specialization is in trauma.
Awesome. Yes.
There's a lot of alphabet soup there.
Yes. We'll be talking about trauma today. And, but before that, what made you get into this line of work?
So really interesting. I think it was like my senior year of high school. There was one teacher who I did not really get along with. She was trying to recruit me to go to the Marines, and I did not want to. That was not what I was set in doing after high school. But she was actually my teacher for my psychology class. And I ended up liking it, and I did it throughout community college. I continued it in my undergrad, but I always told myself, like, I'm never going to go down the clinical route because there's just this stigma behind it of certain clients and what that looks like. And so now if I could go back and tell my younger self, like, don't think that way, it's actually like really rewarding. I would so do that, because little did I know, things came full circle. My younger brother was very much involved with community mental health because of his diagnosis, my older brother as well, and my mom. And things really do come full circle, because now I'm working for the organization that my brother used to get help from, both my brothers and my mom. So it's really interesting that, like, now it's, like I said, come full circle. I'm now working with the company that gave just so much back to my family, and I feel it's my turn to give back to my community. And that's why I'm here. And I'm just so happy with the work that I'm doing right now.
Wow. That's so powerful. That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
So, well, today we're going to be talking about intergenerational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And asked you what you'd like to talk about. And this was it. And I did a little research myself. I knew a little about intergenerational trauma, but I'm excited to get into it today. So can you tell us what it is and tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So in simpler terms, I like to call it kind of the unresolved problems and issues that have been passed down through the generations onto the next generations to come. Mm-hmm. A lot of that can be like domestic violence. It can be substance use. It can just be trauma that you've experienced. And if we don't resolve that through our own work and through our own generations, we end up passing that down a lot of the times onto our children and then those children onto their children. So it's a repeating cycle of how we're not solving the problems that have happened and the experiences, right? I like to kind of steer away from the word trauma and use the word experiences. And so if we don't solve that and try to work on what's happened to us, then it does eventually get passed down through the generations, unfortunately.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure a lot of people listening can have their own experiences with that as well.
Very much so. Yeah. And I didn't really understand intergenerational trauma until I got into my master's program. And I realized, oh, that's why my mom thinks that way. And that's why my grandmother, you know, behaves that way. And that makes a lot of sense as to why we behave this way in the Latinx community as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I can even think about different community types that have intergenerational trauma, everywhere from religion, race, ethnicity, sexuality.
Yeah, very much so. I was going to say, like, for example, like in the Asian Pacific community, we see a lot of not being able to talk about like what's happened throughout their culture. I believe I did a project a few semesters back where we talked about like the Japanese internment camps here in Southern California and how a lot of the generations that were first in those camps, like the older generations, never spoke about the trauma that happened. And so that left the following generations questioning, you know, what happened? What did you go through? But it was a lot of just shutting down and not being able to process what had happened. And slowly that got passed down through the generations and not knowing your history and how you kind of were just like wiped out and moved. And in a weird way, you know, there was a lot of just racism that was going on, unfortunately. And one of the closest camps is actually like maybe 10 miles away from me. It's now a horse racetrack. But they would put these individuals in the stalls of the horse stalls, you know, and it's just so interesting to see how that just is so close to home.
Wow. Yeah. And shows what researching your area and just researching facts about different communities can do and cultures.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's not that many people around that know that that horse stable was there for that before.
Yeah, exactly. I just think back to it and I'm like, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of this hasn't been brought to light, or just unfortunately, a lot of the times it had to be, you know, there was this racism that was going on. And so you weren't proud of who you were and where you come from and your cultural background because you're fighting to be more Americanized. And so a lot of that was, you know, losing your roots and your culture throughout that, not speaking your language because you would get in trouble for that. Even like in the Latinx community and like Chicano community, you were fined for speaking Spanish. And that's why a lot of generations now don't speak Spanish because you would get in trouble for that.
Yeah. It's easier to blend in with the majority.
Exactly.
And it's a shame because you look at all these cultures that also, I mean, it goes into culture to culture. Mm-hmm. You could be speaking English in a Spanish area and it's kind of like what happened to your roots, but then you go somewhere to speak Spanish and then you're judged based on that as well. People lose their culture and their sense of being able to have both sides or, and it's always this having to choose scenario nowadays too. It's really sad.
Exactly. I think I feel the same way too. Whenever I go to Mexico and our family lives on the border. So we're actually like maybe 3 hours away from where I live, 3 or 4. And even when I'm there, it is on the border. So a lot of individuals go back and forth working in Mexico and living on the United States side or going to school back and forth every single morning. And so a lot of the times when I'm over there, I feel that you can right away tell that I'm not from there, even in just my accent when I speak Spanish, and Spanish is my first language. And then when I'm here, it's like, okay, having to prove yourself a little too much that you are of this descent and you are very proud of your culture as well. So it's like the saying says in Spanish, ni de aquí, ni de allá, which means not from here nor from there. But I'm very proud because I believe I am from both places. And so I am very proud of that.
Well, that's awesome. You're able to take from both and you know yourself so much. You're so self-aware. And I know there's a lot of people that aren't so lucky to have that experience, but
thank you.
So what makes the cycle of intergenerational trauma continue?
So one thing that we talk a lot about in a lot of the work that we do with like family systems therapy, which is like the biggest therapy that I'm like super huge on. I love this treatment modality. One of the big things we talk about is the differentiation of self, right? Mm-hmm. It's a concept utilized in family therapy. In simpler words, it explains that the less developed person has of their sense of self, the more easily it is for others to impact or control the person. So for example, if a person has like, doesn't have like really healthy interpersonal relationships and awareness of their emotions, then they're not really differentiated or have a good sense of self. And that is passed down through the generations. But if a person is differentiated and has that active awareness, then they won't seek validation in other areas or from other people. They can seek it within themselves and they can pass that on to their children to know, you don't have to look for validation in other areas or from like maybe other men and women, and you can seek that within your own self as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I look into how people are so also just used to being around this trauma that it's kind of like what they say about people with anxiety, like you get used to the chaos, right?
Yeah, and it's normalized.
Right. And then it's like, it's gone and you feel this, you're not comfortable with that sense of calm either. So I think that also continues a cycle when you just are used to living around it. You don't know how else to live.
Very much so. It's kind of like individuals who've been in abusive relationships, right? Once they're so used to the abuse and used to the abuser kind of like manipulating them. And once they find themselves in a healthy relationship, they want to self-sabotage because they're not used to this. They don't think they're worthy enough of being in a healthy relationship or being loved. Mm-hmm. And that's the unfortunate part, because you grew up maybe with your parents not really being differentiated. And so when we have one man and woman, or man and man, woman and woman come together to create this relationship, right? If they're both not really differentiated and they're having that lack of knowledge and awareness in their feelings, they're going to become very codependent of one another and making decisions as well. So what the goal is with differentiating someone is to be able to recognize how you can make those decisions on your own. And like in Latinx community, a lot of times it's calling up your mom and dad, like, hey, what do you think about this? And not being able to just like take that leap and make that decision for yourself.
Yes, definitely. That's definitely also the benefit and power that therapy can bring to you. I speak on how you can gain that sense of autonomy. Yes. Yeah. And you know, I will even admit here, like my husband and I, when we were going to therapy, definitely had a codependent relationship for a while. We have been together since high school.
Right.
So being together so long, you're growing in that area together at the same time. And I also think my parents have a codependent relationship. So seeing that and seeing that as normal is that's how easy it can be to continue a cycle throughout. It's just seeing it as how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's passed down through the generations. Like you said, you saw it maybe within your own parents. You see it maybe within now in your own relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's always like room and space to be able to grow and, you know, kind of break some of that cycle and pass it down to your children, that they can have that sense of autonomy and they do have a voice and they do have feelings. And all of that is very valid, just because we grew up in a household where it was like, you can't cry, or why are you showing emotions, or why are you mad? You know, it's actually all valid. And unfortunately, you know, they were taught, you know, differently. And so I always say in the whole process of, you know, breaking the cycle, it's also okay to mourn the parents you wish you would have had, and also being able to understand, okay, maybe they didn't really know how to parent, and they parented to the best of their abilities, and healing from that process.
Absolutely. I love that you said that, because that's so true. And I'm sure that speaks volumes to people listening, because there's aspects to your understanding now, because also growing up in a totally different time. And thinking to how my parents were raised versus how I was raised, and how I plan on ever, if I ever have kids in the future, to raise them. Each time it's different, and they might have thought that the way their parents raised them was way more extreme than how they raised their kids. And it may get better each time, right? And I'm sure that our parents wish that their parents were certain ways with them. And as frustrating as it can be, I think the hardest part is the forgiveness aspect in it, I would have to think.
Of course. That's one thing I say, you know, you don't have to forgive either, because a lot of people go through these difficult experiences, right? Mm-hmm. Those traumas in their life. You don't have to forgive either. You can just heal from that journey and move forward and grow from those experiences, which is difficult, right? Because if that's what you grew up seeing all the time, that's what was normalized, quote unquote, it becomes hard to break that cycle. And so there's a lot of people who I know who are like in estranged relationships with their parents and don't talk to their parents. I'm like, that's totally fine. You know, you went through a difficult time and you're hurting, and that's okay too, to feel all of that.
Absolutely. And I'm a big advocate of blood is not thicker than water. It's maybe like literally, but like, it's not, it's not in this sense. It's just, it, if you're around people that are causing more harm, whether mentally, physically, anyway, to you, and you think it's best to not be around them, then that's what's best for you.
Yeah, I think even in my own, you know, work, like piggyback off of what you just said, in my own therapy, realizing and coming to that realization that some family members are the abuser, and not realizing that I was the victim. Right. And that was probably like one of the hardest things for me to realize, like, okay, this actually isn't normal, and this actually is not okay. And it's okay to have these feelings, and it's okay to feel that. And they're going to be upset, right? Because they're going to say, well, you know, why are you feel like you're entitled to these emotions and these feelings? And a lot of the times people aren't comfortable with what you're giving them. Right. And so they're just going to project those unresolved problems onto you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Boundary setting, big time.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Love it.
And they hate it.
Yeah. So hard, but they, it needs to get done.
I've had some bad reactions from boundary setting, and it's every time, look, like if you suffer from anxiety setting, I mean, even if you don't, boundary setting sucks, but like, so worth it. And eventually they're going to get it, whether they like it or not, or they know what happens next, right? Either like you slowly kind of step away from the communication, or whatever it is that you decide works best for you. So yeah, it's worth it.
I agree. I so agree. It's uncomfortable, honestly. And that's one thing, like, to whoever is listening, do not give up, is what I really got to say. It's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to have negative reactions because this person was not used to you setting your boundaries. They're used to kind of taking advantage or walking all over you. So keep on pushing, because it's not an easy process, but you know, throughout time and work, it will work.
And yeah, and it does get easier. I think every time, like at this point, you know, it's been years since I started setting boundaries, but at this point, I'm not afraid to be like, no, you know, at first I was like, if I say it now, they might try to like turn it around. And listen, boundary stompers. Okay. Go listen to episode 3 of boundaries. You'll know all about what boundary stompers are, what they do. Wow. It's this loss of control over you that is why they're retaliating. Yes. And it's very uncomfortable for them as well. So, just work on you, worry about you. You're not entitled to other people's emotions or behaviors. are responsible for other people's emotions and behaviors. And just remember, it's a you journey always.
Preach. Love that. Yes. Yes.
So how can you kind of dove into it, but because you're talking about family therapy. So how can this affect how family functions?
Yeah, I was going to say, I have like some points because I actually did a presentation on this, I think 2 semesters ago. So family functioning, right? Like the multi-generational transmission process is what Murray Bowen liked to call it. So for example, if a parent was not taught to process emotions or were too overly dependent of their children, they would eventually pass those attributes onto their children and then those children and those grandchildren as well. Mm-hmm. So again, it goes back to that whole differentiation of self. If you're very codependent, you're going to become the same way with your own children as well. And so that creates problems in the household, right? There's no sense of voice. There's no sense of being able to speak up for yourself, to set those boundaries, to be able to have autonomy, which is huge in like a child's development. You should be able to know that you do have a voice.
Yeah.
Right? What you're going through is okay, and it shouldn't be manipulated. One thing I've learned a lot in family systems work is that when one child is rebelling, quote unquote, right? Trying to set boundaries, break the cycles, you are shaking the homeostasis of the house. And so the matriarch or the patriarch of the house is not going to like that. It's going to be uncomfortable. So they're going to find any way possible to bring you back in, mm-hmm. to, you know, keep the homeostasis as it is. And a lot of the times that's with manipulation.
Yep.
And that's when you realize you're kind of in an abusive relationship, or, you know, this is an abusive relationship. The abuser is manipulating you and bringing you back, making you feel that you will not find anything better anywhere else. You're not going to find a home like this one who's going to help you out and help, you know, care for you and give you the things that you're given in this household. Absolutely. And again, you pass that down through your generations if you can't work through that or process your feelings.
And let's just also make note that not every parent that does this, that says these things, understands that what they're doing is manipulative, because I genuinely believe that one, it's either they heard it themselves, like you said, mm-hmm. in their past, they're doing the same thing. Or they are doing it because it feels like you're either rejecting them or going against the family. Like if you're from a very tight knit family, I mean, I'm from Italians, very, very close knit family. And it was the blood is thicker than water that I had to get over through boundaries. And they were not fans of that, but, but it doesn't have to be that way. And if that's something that you're uncomfortable with, as long as you're not doing any harm by setting boundaries for yourself to anyone. And if they're acting like it's the end of the world, it sounds like a them thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of times that does end up causing a lot of anxiety, and that does end up, you know, anxiety is really passed on a lot through generations as well. And trauma, like, I'm just going to give like transparency on my end. I know my mom had been through her own experiences growing up, right? And so a lot of times growing up, that meant I couldn't have sleepovers at other people's houses, because who knows, you know, who's in that house and what they could do to you. And I didn't mm-hmm. understand that until, you know, a few years ago. I was like, you know what, being a parent is a scary job, and I do understand why you had to do that, but also being able to communicate with your child the reasons why. Because sometimes you just hear, that's
because.
Yeah. And you're like, just because why, you know, you never get an answer. Yeah. It's
frustrating
that we can't. Yes. Yeah. Frustrating, unfortunate, makes you upset, angry to not be able to have that communication. And we end up going and finding partners who also don't know how to communicate, you know, or friends who are also, you know, not able to communicate and process feelings with one another. And then again, we repeat the cycles.
Yep. Because it's so bizarre to be able to actually communicate when you're from a family that doesn't know how to.
Yes, exactly. Or it's like, you know, you spoke up when you were younger. It's like, shut up. What are you doing? You
know, yeah.
Protect your elders kind of thing.
Right. Don't talk back. And it's like, I'm just communicating my emotions, but okay.
Yes. One thing that I laugh a lot about in Latino households is your parents will ask like, oh, what's wrong with you? And you'll answer like, why are you talking back to me? And you're like, but you just asked me to tell you.
I'm so confused.
Yes. And then, you know, for myself, before a lot of the work I did, I would just shut down. And even in, you know, relationships, I would shut down. So even now with my partner of 4 years, in the beginning, it was hard. I was just shutting down. He would shut down too. But throughout a lot of the work that I've done in communicating, we both now know when to give each other space and when to be able to, you know, fix the problem in the moment and not let it, you know, progress later on.
You sound very similar to myself because I'm curious, do you have an avoidant attachment style?
Same. Girl. Oh my gosh. Yes, I very much do. Yeah. I'm all say it loud, say it proud. But I've done a lot of work in being able to have more of that secure attachment and know, okay, you know, whatever happens, happens. And I'm not in control of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. My husband's definitely a more anxious attachment and I'm more avoidant. And in the beginning it was so hard. And I'm like, why do you want to talk about this? Yeah. Why can't we just wake up in the morning and be fine?
Yeah.
And he's like, no.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of it comes from just the relationship I had with my parents mm-hmm. and how I communicated with them. But now it's been great to see how I have that secure attachment and I'm not stuck just ruminating. Right. Just stuck in those negative thoughts and catastrophizing like, oh, the worst could happen. Right. And now being able to validate myself and have autonomy and know, like I said, at the end of the day, whatever happens, happens. Like I'm here for me and I'm going to show up for me. Nobody else will.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's so great when you start, when you get into that mindset and vibe and feeling. And when, now if my parents will say something where I'm like, yeah, that like, wasn't appropriate or that hurt my feelings. And like, you can just see them uncomfortable. Like you're
going to your face. Yes.
You're going to deal with it. We're going to talk about it. Like, I understand that this is not comfortable for you, but too bad.
Yes.
So how can one break the cycle caused by intergenerational trauma?
So I know like as a clinician, I'll speak like as a clinician, I have a few interventions that I have jotted down. And working with the family as a clinician, you're going to focus on maybe the anxiety that's being felt with each of the family members. This is like through family work, of course, and explore like what are some issues within the family and what are some issues like without that are outside the family and the extended family. Individually, I would say just being able to be aware of your emotions, as I was saying earlier, being able to be aware of what's coming up for you. Because a lot of the times we project that onto people, right? So checking in with yourself, like what's happening, what's triggering me? What is my thought process? What's going on? And how can we redirect that into something more positive, right? Allow space for those emotions and whatever's coming up and letting go of that. Because we were taught to suppress those feelings, to not talk about those emotions, to talk about what's making you upset. It's wrong for you to be upset is what we were taught.
Yeah.
And so being in tune with your emotions, being in tune with the feelings that come up for you when you're in an uncomfortable situation.
Yeah.
I want to say also being able to build on autonomy, right? Knowing that you have a voice, knowing that you can speak up, you can set boundaries. It's uncomfortable. Breaking cycles is not easy. There's no book that really kind of guides you and says, hey, step by step, and this is how it's perfectly going to work for you. No, it's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
And so realizing that this is a process, it's not something that happens, you know, from one day to another where there's change, and continuing to just keep pushing forward. And know that, you know, in the future generations, whether you have kids or not, or you know, for the other generations that come after you, letting them know that they have that voice, that they can set boundaries, that it is important to have autonomy so that they can later pass that on to their children as well and be in tune, not codependent, not having to call and be like, hey, mom, what do you think about me doing this decision?
Right.
Being able exactly. to do that for yourself, validate yourself. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I want to add too that I know we're talking about creating boundaries and ending cycles, but it's not that simple for people who are still living at their parents' house or underage, right? And can't leave or kind of have things held over their head in response can get their roof taken away, their sense of security, food. People don't have the ability to and at some times. So just make sure that you're safe. Always put your safety first. And if for any therapists listening, just a reminder that, you know, you can't go tell your 15-year-old client, well, just tell your mom you don't like that because it doesn't work that way. But yeah, just a reminder that this is for people who, you know, are 18 or older and are finally kind of financially becoming more independent. And hopefully you can, there are ways to whittle it in when you're still living there, but it's much slower and more difficult than when you're more independent.
Yes. A lot of the population that I currently work with is, you know, children and teens. Mm-hmm. And so I was even doing that before as a mental health worker and facilitating group therapy and helping facilitate that. And a lot of it was, you know, having that counter transference when I seen an individual underage who was kind of going through something that I similar went through or was currently going through. And so a lot of the work was having to teach them to be assertive with their communication, how to use your I statements, mm-hmm. how to not be passive with what you were trying to say when you were setting the boundary with these individuals and helping them understand, you know, you're still under 18. You might still be living under mom and dad's like house and their rules, and things might go a certain way that you don't agree with. But these are the skills that I can give you to maybe help around that. And also keeping in mind that your parents aren't going to always reciprocate that, unfortunately. And it is tough. It's not easy when you're being threatened, you know, that you're not going to find anything better, or, you know, this is how it is in this house, or if you don't like it, then leave. Yep. You know, we hear that so much.
Yep. Yeah. It's sad. I think people get very stuck in their ways and habits. And especially one thing with adults is they go back and forth with expecting a child to behave as an adult, yet when they do, putting them back in the place of being a child. Like you're just the child, I'm the parent. But then when they don't do certain things, like, you need to be more responsible, you need a blah, blah, blah. So it's very confusing as well.
Yeah, very much so. You're telling them one thing and then showing them another, right? Mm-hmm. And children are like sponges. They're grasping onto everything, whether a lot of times parents believe it or not, or individuals believe it or not, children are grasping onto everything that's going on. People might think, oh, well, they're a year or 2 year old, they're not going to remember this. Yes, the body will remember that some way, somehow. It will come up later on.
Absolutely. So how does we kind of discussed this, but I will dive into it a little deeper. Yeah. How does intergenerational trauma affect different races and cultures?
Yeah. So when I mentioned, well, I come from a Latinx background. I'm first gen Mexican American, born here. And so in Latino culture, you're taught to not speak up, not talk back. There's the gender roles in the household, right? Mm-hmm. And so women are supposed to be like used to cooking and cleaning and raising the children. And the men is, you know, has the role of having to work and bring home the bacon, right? And what I liked in my household is that that wasn't the norm. There wasn't like that machismo in my house. It was women are capable of working and bringing home the bacon and being the breadwinners of the house. And that's what I saw growing up, is my mom being the breadwinner and my dad being the one that kind of cooked and cleaned and picked us up from school. So, you know, in Latino households, you might see those gender roles that happen a lot versus like in the AAPI community, like in the Asian community, you're going to see a lot of respecting your elders, not being able to talk about feelings and processing a lot of that too. In the African-American culture, we're going to see a lot of how, you know, slavery and racism has played out through the generations, right? How there is that trauma behind being pulled over, what it means, you know, like your status, or, you know, being judged by the color of your skin a lot of the times. And always having like those those like that prejudging, I guess, of who you might be or, you know, what you might do based off of, you know, your physical features. And that is passed down to the generations. Many times I've heard it, you know, in the African-American community, is having to raise your children to know that if you're pulled over by the police, you comply no matter what. Mm-hmm. You put your hands up, you know, you don't defy what the police is saying. And a lot of times we want to grow up teaching our children that, you know, the police is safe and we can count on them. And as you grow up and you get older, it's not always the case, right? And it's unfortunate because that is passed down. That trauma is passed down through the generations.
Yeah. For children who are of different cultures and communities to be explained why their skin tone makes people look different is in itself something that you learn at a very young age. We don't learn that in white culture. It's not learned.
Exactly. I think one of the things that I really like growing up is being able to see just a lot of different cultures just everywhere, right? Another culture that's like really like just like heavy and popular within like this area that I live in is the Armenian culture, right? And a lot of what's been passed down through those generations is the Armenian genocide that happened, you know, years ago, and how so many of them were wiped out, you know, languages being wiped out. And so that continues to happen through the generations, and that fear of what if this could happen again, right? Losing your culture, losing your language. And that's, I think, one thing that I really just highlight all the time. I think it's huge that if I ever have children in the future, I want them to continue with Spanish and remember their culture and their roots. But a lot of growing up and, you know, being in a master's program has been realizing, hey, I don't really agree on what my church is trying to tell me about women's reproductive system and about women having pleasure, right, in their sexual encounters, and women, you know, having intercourse before they're married. And so it's hard to, and you're stuck as well, right, trying to still honor your culture, but also honor it in a way where you now don't agree with a lot of what's being said.
Exactly. The way it fits you best. And I was just recording with someone talking about this specifically with religion, because there's areas that we just don't agree on anymore as a society. I mean, some people who are very devout followers of their religion will follow it till the end. And I believe that we're an ever-growing, ever-aging society that needs to stay with the times.
Yeah.
And understand that we know things now that we didn't then.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I totally agree. It's hard because then you feel like you're not fully this person, and you have to understand that, no, it's, I am to, for myself,
mm-hmm.
what makes me comfortable and what I believe. Why would I go out of my way to believe something I don't, just to be a part of this religion or this right. culture?
Exactly. Again, trying to kind of break that cycle too of what maybe religion you might have grown up with or what you might have seen. And then, you know, like you said, you know, keeping up with the times, things are changing. It is very important to keep in mind individuals' pronouns, right? People's sexuality, mm-hmm. Gender, everything. It's huge. And I know this new generation, they're called, you know, very sensitive, quote unquote. But, you know, they're very aware and they're very in tune. And so a lot of times I get, you know, even outside of just like therapy work, when I'm like clocked out and I'm not Amber the therapist, I'm Amber just the daughter or the girlfriend or whatever, or friend. And these topics are brought up and I'm just like, you know, this isn't something I'm going to talk about, because I very strongly support, you know, the LGBTQ plus community and individuals who are very big on talking about pronouns. Like I'm not going to go there with people because they're going to just disagree and are very stuck in their ways. Like, I'm not going to change their, why are we pushing this on children? You know, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, all of our lives, we grew up like being pushed with seeing like heterosexual couples as well, you know?
Oh, but that's okay. That's because normal. Yeah. That's normal. Yeah,
exactly. And it makes people uncomfortable. And so we got to be getting comfortable with the uncomfortable, and this is how it's going to be. And I've said that very much. So like, this is what it's going to be, and it's only going to progress from here. So we'll see, you know, how much more uncomfortable people really get and whose true colors really come out.
And it always cracks me up when people say that this generation's just too sensitive. Like, newsflash, nothing wrong with being sensitive. Does not mean that anyone is weak. It actually is like made me stronger as a person and within myself than when I was so blocked off and what would have been considered not sensitive, right? Or strong in the mindset of others. Sensitivity is awesome. It opens you up to everyone else's worlds and perspectives, and it's nice.
I always say there's a lot of strength and beauty in being able to be vulnerable in your own vulnerability. And yeah, it's okay to be sensitive. I hear the term now, like, you're too sensitive. And I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like,
thank you.
Stop using that term. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to take that as a compliment. Like, what the heck?
My emotional intelligence right now is just
like,
yes. Oh gosh. It's so nice to speak with other counselors about this too, or, even
eye to eye. Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of not eye to eye in the South. So for me,
I have a few, psychologists and psychiatrist friends that, you know, came out here to do their internship year within like our organization and just stayed out here because of what was happening like out in the South and what, you know, like religion and like what's being pushed on you. And yeah, I've heard some really interesting stories. Even my student to student supervisor is from, she's from Louisiana. You know, she grew up like in the South. And she tells me all the time, you know, it's very different out here in California than what it is, you know, back home. And I'm like, I can't even imagine what that might be like.
It's day and night, truly. I could make a whole episode on how, people are very tight knit in the South, and you almost already know who's going to be on whose side, just by talking with them. And, and it's very strong. It's not the type that's open to hear either side. It's, both sides are very strong with each other, and it can be scary. Yeah. It can be, it's one of the things where you kind of want to be like, you know what, let's just not talk about it, because like agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. Cause it's almost impossible to talk about down here. And there's so many different aspects of, privilege in the South that people don't see or don't, care to see.
Unfortunate.
Yeah. Especially like with the school system. I mean, Louisiana is like dead last.
Okay. I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so unfortunate. Yeah,
it is. It's, but yeah, this all goes ties into what we're talking about. People being raised in these cultures and believing what they're taught to believe.
Exactly.
But yeah, so what therapy techniques, which we talked about one, do you find work best with individuals who have previously or are currently struggling with intergenerational trauma?
Do I find it best to work with them, or?
Which therapy techniques, modalities?
So I like to work a lot with CBT, because I do work with, you know, LA County DMH. We are very huge on evidence-based practices. And so CBT is a really big evidence-based practice. So I like doing like CBT triangle, challenging, rumination, negative thought processing, right? Cognitive distortions, because a lot of the times we are stuck in, for example, Latinx community, right? You want to be out and about and having fun and a great time. And then you're just stuck ruminating, not being able to be mindful and present, because you're wondering, oh my God, are my parents going to be back home and pissed off at me because I'm like spending time with my friends and not them? Or, you know, I should be going to like this church event and I'm not there, or I should be helping out around the house and I'm not. And so we're stuck ruminating a lot of times, and we see this a lot with clients. And so challenging a lot of that. And then once they're ready, going into more of that intergenerational work, right, in the family systems piece. And I've been you know, very honored to work with some parents and children who are very open to breaking the cycles and doing the work. And I've been met with some parents who are very resistant and I don't believe in mental health. You know, that doesn't exist. You know, you're crazy to get medication and any of that. So you get kind of a little bit of both sides. But I think CBT is really helpful and kind of challenging those negative thought processing and helping you be mindful, enjoy the moment, and then being able to look at the generational cycles piece. Like, how is it that this has been passed down, or why your grandmother did this and then passed it down to your mother, and now you're doing the same, right? And I think a lot of the times I had to kind of sit back and reflect, like, oh my God, I am my mom. Or, you know what? Yeah, I am my grandmother.
Yes, I've definitely had those aha moments where I'm like, I could have stayed ignorant to that fact.
Yes. You know, my partner used to tell me that a lot. He's like, you know, you and your mom are the same person. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And now, you know, even in my work and in my master's program, I'm just like, oh, you know what? Yeah, we are.
You're like, don't you ever say that to my face again.
Which, you know, it was hard to accept, but in a way it's like, I'm proud of it at the same time, but I'm also now trying to come at it in a different approach so that if I ever have kids,
yeah,
it looks different.
Yeah. You can have the positive aspects of your parents. I'm mainly talking about the opposite, but
yeah,
but, I like that you use CBT because, you know, I'd have mentioned on here before and, a episode that hasn't come out yet that CBT might not be the best for, seriously traumatic events and, trauma, yeah, from the past to deal with, but for behavioral changes, which setting boundaries and changing how the family functions is totally goes into behavior, because you can only change your behavior. You have no control over how anybody else acts or behaves or what they say. You can hopefully their behaviors will change as a reflection of you changing your own. And that's what the goal is. But yeah, CBT sounds great for that.
Yeah. I think, in the long run, I really want to take the TFCBT course at my site and just, you know, have that under my belt to be able to help individuals, because trauma is my specialization within my master's program. And I really just want to continue that in the future.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing that I take away from my own therapy is my therapist telling me, you cannot control other people's behaviors. You can only control how you respond to that. And once you start seeing that, things are going to be so much better for you. And so once I really started, you know, kind of implementing that in my work and my daily life, I was like, you know what? I'm not stuck ruminating. I'm not stuck, you know, just catastrophizing everything or like doing the mind reading and fortune telling. I'm now able to enjoy the present and have fun and have a good time. And the consequences will come later because I'm going to get yelled at regardless.
Yeah. And also some awesome CBT terms I just heard. Yeah. What was it? Mind reading and fortune telling. Yeah. Yes. There's also, all or nothing, black and white.
Yes.
These are great terms.
Oh my gosh. Love that. If anyone here listening knows CBT, some really great terms to really help you like challenge some of that, negative thinking.
Absolutely.
Self-talk. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of therapists that aren't CBT that still use these terms. These terms are great. Go look them up. Awesome.
Yes.
So I guess that was all of our questions. Where can listeners find you and follow you?
Yeah. So if you go on my Instagram, it's Amber Castro MFT. It's just all, you know, all together, no spaces. I talk a lot about, you know, breaking cycles, a little bit of advice on, you know, grad school and what that might look like and what have been some experiences you've had in grad school, you know, talking about the younger self. I love the work and talking about healing the inner child. Love that. Also love that. Kind of goes into the whole like family systems and being able to do the intergenerational piece, right? Because at the end of the day, we are all healing that inner child that needed us so badly when we were younger. And now we're that adult for them. We're who we needed when we were children. And that's something I'm just like so proud of. Like, man, I love that. And I hold space and I hug my inner child. And I hope everyone can do the same thing too and let them know, you know, you are safe.
Love that. I inner child work is not easy, but it's so rewarding.
Yes.
It's very like, you will cry. You won't understand what just happened. And then you're like, part of me feels better.
Yeah. No, for real.
That's like the sequence of events to expect. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, thank you so, so much for being on the podcast today. I think this was a great episode that people are going to learn a lot from. And I hope we can have you back for a inner child one. That'd be cool.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And thank you again so much for allowing me to be in the space with you. And if anyone listening takes anything out of today, it's know that your feelings are valid and you do have a voice to speak up.
Yes, ma'am. I love that. What a way to end it.
Love it.
Today's music was written and produced by Tyler O'Brien. You can find him on Instagram at Dreamscape, DREAMSCAPE, and follow his band at Wastelander_band on Instagram.